This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 420, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Saw the city take his friend, so he's moving on again, left in a fire of broken promises. Learned how to race a boat down an old and dirty road, he's trying to make a change.
Hey everybody, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 420. My name is Paul Montgomery. Joining me, Mr. Joshua Kilpatrick.
No.
Oops. That was awful week. I lost that.
I don't know who was supposed
Connor
to answer that one.
Connor Kilpatrick is here.
I was confused. Someone is enjoying their day.
And Joshua Flanagan.
Hi.
We are, I think. Hi. Yes, we are. And we
Paul,
like
did you enjoy your week off?
Hardly registered. And
Connor, how's your drought going?
Awesome.
Paul, how's your
I'll mail you Armageddon? Some snow. Use whatever technology Russia's using to stockpile their snow for the Olympics, and I'll send
they
some
They need
snow.
The snow. You guys have the snow. I feel like you're missing out on a business opportunity here.
I said one of my goals is I don't ever want to sell, market, or import snow.
I thought it was going to be a deal with the Russians.
Or any snow that has been marketed or produced, I forget.
Any Russian gangsters, I thought you didn't. That was your other.
You know what?
Lost a whole bunch of our listenership.
White gold.
All of our Russian gangster listenership?
I'm sure there's got to be.
There's a downtick in the Vlad graph.
Jesus Christ. Every week we read a bunch of comics, and one of us picks the best book that they read. We call that the pick of the week, and we talk about it on this year's podcast along with other books of the week. Various other topics of interest, try to offend as many people as possible, and other goofy nonsense. Before we get to the show, just a quick reminder, this is a review show, and we will be talking about the books that came out this week, telling you all about all the people that died, anybody who lost a hand, any of that stuff's fair game here. So if you're easily offended by that or anything else, switch over to something else.
You know, I'm offended by Canadians.
This week, Connor had the pick,
You know what I really miss is JSA, that book we used to love.
Whoa, it's going back.
And I'm really excited because All New Invaders number one gave me that strong JSA feeling.
Oh, you made the right call.
James Robinson's the writer. Steve Pugh, is the artist. He was formerly on Animal Man, and I don't think he fits so well, even though he was once an Animal Man artist. And this is way more his speed. And I thought his art really felt like when Dale Eaglesham was doing JSA. I just thought this entire thing had that kind of feeling. And what's funny is that, you know, Robinson's known as the sort of golden age writer. I don't know if he likes that moniker or not, but he has it because he's really dialed into that era. And so when this book was the first announced, people thought it was going to be a book that took place in World War II time because the Invaders were the World War II super team, Captain America, Namor, Bucky, Human Torch, Toro. But he said, no, this is going to be in the modern day. But even though it is, it really had that feeling. I mean, this issue focuses mostly on Human Torch And this is not Johnny Storm Human Torch. This is the original Jim Hammond Human Torch. But he's living in a small town. It feels very much like it's taking place in the 40s. It's in Blaketon, Illinois, and you know, he works in the garage and people hang out at the diner, and
it's when America was simpler.
Right. It's real America.
It took me a while to figure out if it was modern day or some other time in the past, and eventually I got the visual cues. But you do get a long flashback to, you know, the good old days, to the Nazis and all that.
And, there's that long flashback to a battle during World War II era, and it's in really great colors. It's sort of black and white-ish. I just loved the feel of it. It really felt like we used to love the JSA book, and we talk about it all the time, and it was a great teen book and a great tone, and this just felt like that tone. And
well, but it was also, you add in, I love the Invaders.
Yes, the Invaders is a great team.
Yeah, and as a concept, it sort of stretches back to Marvel's roots. I always like the Jim Hammond character. They don't use him a lot, which I like. I think that's good.
When was the last time we saw him? There were some hints or references to that story. And I forgot what it was. But I remember we read it. We talked about it. It was probably in a Cat book, wasn't it? It was in that Captain America and Bucky book.
Yep.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I always like when he shows up, you know, Captain America and Winter Soldier working together is interesting. And, you know, it's just a great team in the way that they all play off each other. And at first I was like, oh, this is going to be this weird sort of Kree cosmic part of the storyline. But I decided that that's fun. That plays off these characters really well. And I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, whatever it is, it's not that he does a Golden Age style. It's that he, Robinson, seems to be able to write these characters from the Golden Age in a modern comic book in a better and different way than almost anybody else can.
And it's a way that doesn't feel hokey, but it also doesn't feel like they're making them edgy.
Yeah.
They feel like members of the Greatest Generation, but in the modern time, but not in a silly way, which is a hard thing to do. It's not an easy thing to do.
It's his special talent for whatever reason, you know, like that's his like one of his savantisms, I guess.
And I'm with you.
We've seen it over and over.
You know, the Kree is, you know, not my favorite, but I like those characters. I was a little confused in the beginning. I didn't, you know, did they kill Sabretooth? Who was that person dressed in Sabretooth's costume? I didn't know what that was about. But hey, you're right. It fits sort of in that old classic Marvel Kree Skull War type of thing, that throwback sort of feeling. But I just loved everything about this. Those great 2-page spreads in this issue of during the flashbacks. With that silly character who was not quite Captain America. What was his name?
Jack Liberty.
Major Liberty.
Oh.
He was stupid. But, which is part of the point.
He was a jerk, too.
Yeah, he was totally a jerk. But I thought there's interesting dynamics going on here. Jim Hammond just wanted to be left alone, work in his garage in the small town, but now he's called back into duty because the Kree attack his little town and kill his friend, and Captain America has a dumb suit on, but we accept that, sort of.
What else are we going to do? And then he is... But he is quite flagrant with his flame use.
Yeah.
He's really throwing that everywhere, Jimbo.
I feel like even when you grab the guy to save him, even though you're not, your arm is now no longer flamed, I feel like just the proximity to the flame probably blistered that guy's skin.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that's how you cook, you know. You don't put something in the flame. It's the heat that comes off the flame. I feel like he cooked that guy from inside.
That Kree lady has some big legs.
Well...
That's not an art complaint. I thought it was really cool. I was like, that's all. They gave her a different body type, which doesn't happen all that much.
Paul, no, what you haven't said much. What did you?
This didn't do a whole lot for me, but
wow,
I know.
I thought for you of all people, you would love this.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a weird. There was a really nice storytelling moment though. I like when the Kree lady knocks out the Human Torch, and he's on the ground, and you see from his perspective, she's approaching through the smoke, and then you have that great triumphant moment when Cap and Bucky show up. That was really nice. I think it was inventive and exciting to show it from that perspective. I mean, you could show that from a third perspective point of view, and it wouldn't be as interesting. But I really liked going, you know, behind the android's eyes, and I like that he doesn't really know how to classify himself. Like, am I human? Am I an android? Am I a robot? What am I? And
I like that those are the questions that readers have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially newer readers.
No. Yeah. Quite honestly, that was my question. I was like, what is this guy?
By the way, in the continuing tales of Captain America's ever-changing shield size, if you look at that look at that page where Captain America and Bucky show up.
Yeah.
Look at the size of the shield.
Mm-hmm. It's a big shield there.
It is giant.
Going sledding.
It looks like he could go sledding down that. And you know, sometimes it's very small. It's just funny. So, Paul, let's explore this. Why did you hate it?
I didn't hate it. I'm going to stick with it. And see, like, honestly, it seems like something I would like, right? Because, you bring up Justice Society of America, and I love that book, and I loved what he did on the earlier JSA series. Maybe it's the artwork? I don't know.
It's almost, I'd be hard-pressed to say this was the same Steve Pugh did Animal Man. Obviously, the production was very different for it. And you're right. It's much more fitting for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Also, Namor has gigantic quads too, but I guess he swims a lot.
He does swim a lot.
So that makes sense.
But wouldn't he be lean then?
He had big shoulders.
Yeah.
Well, he's a kick-based swimmer.
I see.
I suppose.
But does he still have the wings on his ankles?
Yes, that's how he flies.
So maybe from the wings moving a lot, that works.
So you're
that
saying
works the quads.
Those wings are quad-based?
Oh, yeah, the quad-based wings.
Right, so interesting. So that's how the power of his quads hold him up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how he can completely and totally ignore the laws of aerodynamics.
And physics?
By having 3-inch wings out of each ankle and fly his bulk about.
Interesting. Super strong quads. So I'm really excited about this. I remember as a kid, I was like Cap as a kid, going to a convention once and buying a whole giant stack of the Roy Thomas Invaders books for like, $10, buying like 30 of them. And those are some of my favorite comics forever. I love the Invaders.
Yeah.
Just a great group of characters. So this week also had Batman 27, which I really liked for a couple of reasons. One is that it was sort of like the dark mirror image of Batman Year One, in that normally in the Batman story, when he's young, he's, the cops are hounding him, but it's not really that bad. You never really get the sense of danger. But here I really felt like I felt a lot of tension, even though I know the cops weren't going to shoot him. In this opening scene, he's being chased by the cops and they're shooting at him, and he gets shot a bunch of times. His helmet gets all destroyed, and he's constantly running from one escape route to another, but they've always got him cut off. And this is a Batman who does not have the plan for everything. He is not on top of everything, and he's not. You know, I felt real danger in those scenes, which was fun.
That's where that comes from, is that we're like, well, this isn't the same Batman who's got it all figured out yet. Right. And even though we know he's not going to get killed, it's kind of refreshing to be like, oh, he has no idea what he's doing yet. Gives you, he's going to have to get through it, not just because he's badass, but also because he's lucky, basically. He needs that, which we don't think of with modern Batman.
I also like this because the combination of all the boats and the coloring made it feel a lot like a Michael Mann movie. I just watched Thief with James Caan
the
other day.
I can totally see that.
It's just all those pastels, and it's pretty vibrant. It's pretty outlandish for a Batman book to be colored this way, but I really like it.
Yeah, no, it's cool.
I like the palette a lot.
I also like that Jim Gordon is sort of a misfit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Year One, he commanded those cops. He got him to, step down so the Batman could escape. But here, he basically has to steal a boat and go off on his own and save him by himself because he's just got no real sway in the police force.
I really like that story, the Gordon story of...
I like that it was a flashback to an earlier moment. I thought that was nice to tie that up, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot to like here. I think the only criticism would be that, we're 7 issues in, we're really just sort of now getting to the story.
Yeah, that was what I was going to... It feels like this has been going on a really long time. And there was a break in the middle, wasn't there? Or is there not?
I feel
like it was the Villains Month, maybe?
Oh, yeah, stupid Villains Month.
So it feels like the story's been in Act 1, basically, for a really long time.
But I also think that's a byproduct of, like Marvel double shipping stuff, where it's sort of spoiled on stories
accelerated. It's literally been 7 issues, though.
That's true. It is. I mean, it's a long story. You mentioned Year One... And it's kind of like taking the idea of the police corruption and Batman being hounded by the police and decompressing that stuff.
Yeah.
Because you're going through a whole year in Year One, and so a lot of things get compressed down.
Right.
I think what he's doing is decompressing that and actually exploring what is it like for Gordon and having everybody else on the force like sneering at him.
By the way, that dog attack was really fucked up.
Oh, yeah. Agreed.
Like the Gordon's fellow cops sick their... dog fighting dogs on him because he won't go on the take, and that was awful. I don't know. I mean, how do you come back from that? How do you not kill all those cops one by one silently in the night?
And he, put the gun to the back of the guy's head and was like, "Listen, I was this close to pulling the trigger."
Well, that's the thing where he makes the choice. Like, no, I'm gonna make sure the department's done right, and he takes over and makes things work his way, and that's his slow revenge. And then oddly enough, he kept the pit bull that they gave him as a threat.
Just weird.
That was a weird choice. One thing I want to mention about...
I don't think it's a weird choice, but I'm a dog person, so...
Because it showed up a couple of times here, is that there are some very strong artistic references to The Dark Knight Returns, I feel like.
Yep.
There's Batman on the wire.
Yeah.
And then that last page, very specifically, the glove shooting out like that. I was just like, that looks like Frank Miller. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think if you're going to reference it, that's a really nice way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, the one on the wire was very, very specific.
I almost thought that was an exact quote, like if that, but maybe I've been seeing that image around lately.
But the glove is more subtle. And there was one in the beginning where he's jumping in the spotlight, which was also a visual reference to something else that I can't remember exactly what. But subtle. It's good.
I like that idea of that Alfred brings up that you're doing this as a punishment to us, you know, for not being able to save your parents and everything. And I think that's an interesting angle on it, that you're forcing us to bear witness as to your sacrifice and what you're doing. I think that's a good take on the Batman mythology.
Right.
The same thing with like Gordon wearing the coat, is he's also forcing the other cops to remember that night where they attacked him. He's like, I'm going to wear, and that goes with keeping the puppy too. I'm going to keep these things, and I'm not going to, you know, be ashamed or be afraid of you. I'm going to continue on with my life and do what I do. And my daughter's going to enjoy playing with this dog, you know.
I'm sure we're looking forward to the Riddler.
Yeah.
I love the tension in this issue. I liked how uncomfortable it made me,
mm-hmm.
which is good. Deadly Class number 1 from Image Comics, Rick Remender's new Image book. Takes place in 1987 in San Francisco, which was a bit of...
Don't you forget about me.
What did you guys think of this?
I'm just going to sing that the whole time while you talk about it.
Although this was really cool, I thought that from a visual perspective, it's really interesting. There are a lot of pages that I just liked looking how they were laid out. And I'm glad I read this in print, you know, and not, you know, guided view or anything like that, because the pages were very inventive. And it's interesting to set it back in 1987, and it feels very personal. It feels very angry.
Did you read the little essay in the back?
I didn't, but yeah, this I'm going to go back.
You should.
Okay.
He's exercising the demons in this one.
Yeah.
This was
we had a rough time.
Yeah, so if people didn't read this or don't know what it is, this is a story of a street kid who's been living on the street for a while after his parents died in a very awful way right in front of him. There was some sort of incident at his group home, which is still a mystery at this point, and he's been living on the street on the run from the police, and he is saved by a group of, like, a goth girl and all the different kind of people, and it turns out that they are all deadly assassins in training. There's an underground assassin school that he's being recruited for. And so that's the big reveal at the end, is that there's this literally underground assassin school. It's in the catacombs. And he's been brought on board by this little tiny man who runs the school.
I don't quite know how I feel about this yet.
I don't either. I thought it was very much an opening act, and I wasn't sure how much I liked.
Yeah, that's kind of, I mean, it really is going to depend on what goes from there. Obviously, you know, we're big fans of Rick's work, and I'll stick with it. One of the things you'd mentioned the storytelling choices, I don't think I noticed it so much when I was reading it, but as I'm flipping through it now, you see the horizontal lines of the panels tilt.
Yeah, everything's canted
when things speed up.
Yep.
So when the action starts, everything goes askew.
There's some crazy pages here.
I really feel like that's a thing I should have seen before or noticed somewhere. Because if it hasn't been used, that's ridiculous. I'm assuming that feels like a manga influence or something. Yeah.
It's a great way to stylized way to do action.
Yeah, yeah.
If you look at, it's like, I don't know what page it is, but like, you know, midway through the book when the girl shows up on the motorcycle, if you look at the top, he's running down the steps, and the steps are consistent. It's just like they chopped up a single image, but he's in every panel, getting closer, and then he breaks out of the panel. You know, really frenetic,
the
and then and
fantastic
it's
in this.
The art is absolutely gorgeous, and there's a lot of examples of that where it's you take the background, the setting, and that's one image that's chopped into three panels, and then the characters move through it.
Wes Craig is the artist, and Lee Lowridge on the colors. They need all the credit in the world because it's a great looking.
Trying to figure out why I know Wes Craig. I feel like we've talked about him on something, but I don't remember what now.
So we definitely have.
I'm looking up pages. I think he did Guardians of the Galaxy for a while.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
And it was a much more...
What's funny about this is that, you know...
Traditional style.
I'm counting the pages. I mean, the panels on the page as we talk. And 9-10 panels is not unusual in this book.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't feel it. You know, it doesn't feel overly claustrophobic.
The introduction of the teacher, the guy with the blue beard, mm-hmm. we see him from behind first, and he's just this bald guy. And I thought it was kind of a sort of like a an in-joke sort of, because you're like, Professor Xavier? Right. You know, like he's the teacher of all these kids and he's bald. Then when you finally see him from the front, looks totally different. But just as an introduction,
cool. No, it was a nice little, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like the art a lot. The story's interesting. I don't know if I love it though, or I need to see what happens next.
I thought about Josh a little bit at the end with the reveal of the school, and sort of it having this sort of like Hogwarts vibe to it, like more so than X-Men. But I thought of you, Josh, because you're always talking about I wish I could find a great World War II comic that isn't like an occult thing, and this is a book that definitely. It's this story about a runaway, and then it gets more and more crazy until the end. It becomes this. It's this school story, which is kind of not the thing you were expecting from the first page.
Yeah,
and so it's this left turn. But I think it shifts. It's you figure it out by the end of the first issue. So I think that's fair game. But I was sort of thrown for a loop when we. When he's like, do you want to join my assassin school? And I'll teach you how to kill people.
That's not unusual, Paul. I get an offer like that like 3-4 times a month. Maybe it's just where I live.
So Wes Craig did do Guardians of the Galaxy for a bit. He did recently did an Adventures of Superman story.
Hmm.
He's been on a lot of Wildstorm stuff.
Interesting.
Over time. Wildcats, all a bunch of that stuff. The Authority for a little bit in 2008 or so. So lots of work we've seen him, but I feel like this is a step up.
Oh, totally.
In a big way.
I think this is kind of a, tour de force visually. I would call this my pick of the week. I mean, if there's anything that's sort of a qualm about this, it's the same thing about Black Science, where it's a lot of internal monologue, and dial that back just a little bit, and just let the more that he lets the visuals, carry it, I think the stronger it is.
Sort of the modern way, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and it's all interesting stuff. It's just like, yeah.
I mean, it's just sort of the way people write comics now.
I don't know. This is another really good one from Image. I like this a lot.
They have too many.
It's not fair.
Slow down.
I've got a big stack of stuff because I missed a couple of weeks of it, and they're just haunting me on my nightstand. I'm like, oh. I mean, not even a bad way. Like, I want to read books. What can I cut so that I'm not reading so many? And I don't have any.
And there's more coming. Difficult. There's a Jason Aaron book coming. There's a Scott Snyder book coming. You know, what are you going to do? They're drowning us in good books.
Just briefly, I wanted to mention Star Wars Legacy by Karina Becko, Gabriel Hardman, and Jordan Boyd doing some great colors here. This continues to be one of my favorite just Star Wars things out there, not just Star Wars comics. I think it really goes to that spirit of the original trilogy. And you've got all the different, alien groups and stuff. There's a lot of bounty hunter action here. I can never remember the bounty hunter's name, the IG-88 kind of droid bounty hunter that they're flying around with, but he's great. And it's sort of like the opposite of Han Solo and C-3PO's relationship, where 3PO is freaking out at everything. In this one, the IG-88 kind of droid is just, stay calm, we're cool, we're going through the minefield, it's going to be all right. It's the exact amount of risk for the amount of money that we're going to be making. If we weren't making so much money, it wouldn't be worth the risk, but we're cool, we're good. What's kind of bittersweet about this is, they're talking, about Disney going through and culling all of the Star Wars expanded universe continuity, and I think they're really going to do some scorched earth there. And now this will always exist, and it might be, after a while, it might be hard to find a copy after, the first printing, but it's kind of sad that they just got off to a really great start with this, and I don't know how much longer they're going to be able to continue it with the change up and everything going over to Marvel. So
get the end of the year, till the end of the year.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's enough time to tell a pretty good story, and I mean they're already up to 11, so that's pretty healthy. That's probably what they wanted to do in the first place.
It goes higher than 11, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So,
I feel bad about that.
In this one, we meet Anya's ex-boyfriend, possibly, and he maybe kidnaps her because there's a bounty on her head because she's wanted for killing a Jedi Knight, basically. So very exciting stuff.
I was really surprised to see that Gabe was on art. I was also very surprised to see that Jordan Boyd was on Colors. I've worked with him before. One of the things that was really cool about this, the thing that I guess I didn't expect from it, is that it's so, like, it's constantly, I don't want to say it's referencing Star Wars, but it is. But it's not like name checking or anything like that. There's just tonal things and beats that are echoes, I guess, of what came before it, which is, I guess, unexpected and kind of cool. It makes it feel like Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. I've been enjoying it.
Star Wars.
Bad Dog. I had to grab the fifth issue. Wait, is this the fifth or sixth?
Six, it says in the script.
Right, no, I know. I had to grab the fifth issue and read that before I got to the sixth issue because I had to read. There was a lot of comics this week, but I also had to read a lot of other comics that I hadn't read from the last month.
Is this the book that came out years ago?
Yeah, exactly. So all of a sudden, after a long hiatus, 5 and 6 came out, you know, within a month of each other. And 6 was huge.
Yes, it was.
Super long. It's weird because the book is like a dirty mouth.
You need to refresh everyone's memory about this book.
Yeah, okay. So Bad Dog
mine.
Is about a werewolf named Lou, I think. Yeah, Lou. And he's a bounty hunter. And he lives in the world of men. And there's a lot of swearing. He has a partner who's all like a naked Christian fundamentalist who drinks a lot. And then like the other bounty hunter hates him, but he also wants him to work for him.
Are there other werewolves or he's the only werewolf?
He appears to be the only werewolf. I would say that he was the only supernatural thing, but then there's sort of a supernatural thing that happens at the end.
There's a head in the fridge.
Yeah.
Fox.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a very... Like, I can't. It's a very strange book.
It is.
It doesn't. It's Joe Kelly, and it doesn't. Like if you've ever met Joe Kelly or read any of Joe Kelly's work, like you wouldn't think that such filthy things would come out of his head. I mean, like it's like just the dialogue. Even it's very sort of crass, like you know that amped up kind of crass. But it's interesting. It's good, and I'm really glad they were able to finish it. I'm glad that I read it, but it's just the oddest thing. I cannot pin this down at all.
For reference, so 5 just came out a couple weeks ago, and 4 came out March 16th, 2011. So it was a while there. and so that was sort of why when I got my hands on 5, I was actually like, you know what? I don't remember the first 4 as well as I would like to, and a collection is probably coming. So I kind of flipped through it, and I'm gonna wait for the collection.
Okay, it was an interesting ending. Felt like it's one of those things. Like I'd like to do a lot with this,
or is it continuing?
No, it's over. This is just the end of it.
The dream is dead.
Yeah, it felt like that wasn't the way they wanted to go, but it was like I'm never gonna have time to finish this. That kind of thing. That's what that ending felt like. But they kept Diego Greco, the artist, on it. He did the whole thing. It looks sort of painterly and pencil-y all at the same time.
Yeah,
it's just odd. It's very difficult to pin down. I'm glad I read it, but I'm not going to sit here and be like, I loved it.
Loved it.
I'm going back and I'm looking at a preview of issue 4, and you got a big werewolf with like a stylish cowboy hat and a very tight Jack Daniels T-shirt, carrying his groceries in a Starbucks cup.
A hipster werewolf.
Kinda.
No, more like a
rockabilly.
Like a rockabilly. Yep.
Yeah, rockabilly.
But not the hipster kind.
Yeah. I see.
Just sort of like that.
So you loved
not
it.
Trying.
I think we should
That's
only do absolutes this time. Love it or hate it. No in between. No nuance.
It's the best book ever.
Oh, okay.
Is what I mean. Obviously. That's what I should have just said to begin with, just so nobody's confused.
All new X-Men 22 point now. 22
What's
points.
What's going on
what?
With the numbers?
It means it's a good jumping on point.
Whatever.
I think they should it should be 22 point. We don't give a fuck.
You know what it means? The numbers mean that somebody at Marvel figured out that, hey, these numbers don't matter at all.
Yeah.
We can use them to market with them because you can put anything you want on the front. Yeah, I know. And
they've now been putting in like the codes for the event. Like it was 22 point INF for the Infinity tie-ins.
So like on the one hand... You know, my mind is like, I really like the numbers, and this is dumb. But on the other hand, like, I get it, and the numbers don't really matter. I'm just going to, if I have a series, I'm just going to do I'm going to do just all issue number ones, and then the parentheses will be the issue after that. It's number one.
They did that at one of those books. Did that. Skull Kickers did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then that guy already took fine. I won't do it.
Actually, he just changed the title with the new number one for every issue.
What's the book about?
This is just the next issue of all new X-Men. So yeah. If you're reading that book, you might want
to. Good to go.
And we're leading up the tie-in to Guardians of the Galaxy.
This is going
to
cross over with Guardians of the Galaxy. Anyway, at first I was annoyed, but then I realized, why am I annoyed? Because it's going to be written by Bendis. I've always liked Eminem. Crossovers. Yeah. Eminem's going to draw it. And I haven't seen the Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't know what that's going to be like. And plus, I always like when characters who never, ever, 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 ever meet up get to bounce off of each other.
I think that's the big selling point for me. He's like, huh? Okay,
so by the end of it,
cool.
I was pretty excited. I thought this was a fun issue again. I really liked the scene in which Cyclops and Jean are fighting at the table, but Angel's sitting in between them. Because I've been in that scenario where a couple's fighting over you, and you're just
Stuart
like,
Eminem draws.
It was me and Ron.
Stuart Eminem draws a delicious looking burger.
Yes.
It was almost pornographic the way he drew that burger.
I just love the characters of this book, and I think it's great. I loved Iceman just being out in the snow doing snow angels, which I assume what Josh has been doing the last few months.
It's frozen solid. You can't
do that. That's not how snow works anymore. I like that. And also, X-23 is in the mix, and she's got a costume just like the all-new X-Men.
Yeah, you got to miss that discussion last week, Paul, in which we lambasted the stupid costume on X-23.
The costume's dumb, but yeah. She fits in perfectly with that group.
She's a great addition to the group, and she's a great
pick. She's their Wolverine.
Yeah. And then the Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be interesting. I mean, obviously it's the movie tie-in version plus Angela.
Angela.
Oh, good. We can do this now. Whenever she shows up, we can talk like Tony Danza.
Samantha.
Samantha, Mona.
Jonathan
and Mona.
Mona.
Everyone under 30, use the internet for that.
I think it's a higher age.
Everyone under 34.
You're a special case.
This is great. I thought this was a lot of fun. If you were scared off by this numbering, don't be. And if you're on the fence at all about the crossover, I would say do it. I'm excited for it. And plus, isn't like what's her name drawing Guardians of the Galaxy? Sarah Pacelli?
No.
She had been. Kevin McGuire.
They're going back and forth on it.
He's got good people like, drawing Guardians of the Galaxy.
Francesco Francavilla.
Yeah.
And
ooh.
JL.
See, now, Paul, you said JLI. Earlier that the point now thing means it's a good jumping on point, except I'm looking at the checklist in the back, and everything is point now.
Jump on it all.
Guardians of the Galaxy, number 11, point now. All new X-Men, number 22, point now. Ugh.
I could just see myself being annoyed trying to pre-order in the shop. You have a copy of all new X-Men Uncanny Stirs.
Point now.
Point Canisters. Now. Yeah, it'll get there. Give it time.
So check it out. Now, Josh, when this trade comes out, where will people want to buy it?
You could buy the volume 1 point now from ifanboy.com/Amazon. That'll link you into Amazon. And when you do that, you are sort of indirectly contributing to iFanboy and the work, the important work we do here. So and that's the thing. You don't have to do a lot. You go to Amazon. Anything you buy, we get a little piece of. Cost you nothing. Cost Amazon something. Seems like everybody's happy because Amazon
cuts into their drone budget. That's all.
Yeah,
which is already pretty high.
Yeah, what we're saying is that they have a lot of money. So I don't think a lot of you are out there worrying about Amazon. But if you are, I think you need to table that doubt. It'll be fine. You can also be a little more direct. You go to ifanboy.com/registration where you can contribute directly to the health and well-being of our important programs here at www.ifanboy.com. You can either do $3 a month or $30 a year, and that covers the costs of there bag. Are costs. Yeah, there's no tote bags. Tote bags. We couldn't find cruelty-free tote bags, so we had to shelve the whole thing.
Because we printed up like 10,000 of them.
Yeah.
I'm looking into those windbreakers that you can crush down real small and zip into a little pencil case thing.
Turned out they were short. The windbreakers came out short like little bolero jackets, and we just couldn't.
That's not in style anymore.
I just tie them off.
Yeah, but no one wants to see that, Paul. We keep trying to tell you stop tying off your shirts, and you just keep doing it. It's making everybody uncomfortable.
There goes Midriff Montgomery again.
Harley Quinn. We didn't talk about the first one, right? That was when we were off.
Yeah.
I just find it amusing that this is basically Jimmy Palmiotti writing Brooklyn, like a really weirdo version of Brooklyn. Because the premise of this book, if you haven't been reading it, is that Harley Quinn has gotten property and an inheritance, and the property is in Brooklyn. It's in Coney Island, and it's by the water, by the freak shows, and she's now the owner and landlord of this building in Brooklyn, full of all these misfits and weirdos and people from the freak shows. And
is it Brooklyn now or Brooklyn in the 70s?
I feel like it's a little of both.
That's all right.
Like, there's a dog boy who lives in the building, which I didn't realize at first. I was like, why is there a talking dog man and no one seems to care? And then I realized, oh, it was part of the freak show. But I think it's just funny that it's basically Pamiati dropping a character like Harley Quinn into Brooklyn and having her bounce off the locals. You know, she's not really a criminal in this book. She's just Harley Quinn Landlord. That's what it should be called.
If you had named that Harley Quinn Landlord, I'd have checked it out.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You should check it out. I think you would really enjoy it, actually. Check it out. All right.
Okay, Pretty Deadly number 4. I'm not going to try and explain what this is about because some pretty dense mythology.
4 issues
here.
In, Paul, you should be able to.
No, I get it. Like, I can follow it, but to have to verbalize it to you, it would be difficult. It's pretty dense, but it reminds me a lot of Carnival in terms of the mythology and like a force for good and a force for evil, just sort of like heading, barreling towards each other over a period of time. And it's just missing the Clancy Brown. But there's some great sword fighting in here. And it's sort of about like it's a Sergio Leone Western with, you know, like the Grim Reaper in it. That's basically how you would think of it. And the Emma Rios art continues to be just incredible and a perfect match for the poetry of it. Because it's sort of like if they adapted a poem that they found. That's sort of what it feels like. So it's not the most lucid story in the world, but it's got people turning into butterflies and like streams of butterflies and then back, and it's got a death with a skull
so
for a head.
So you're saying this is the perfect book for the episode 420?
Yes, it is.
You said that very creepily.
Uh-huh.
And I applaud you for it. Now, 0 number 5 was the issue that broke my heart. It broke it right in half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because this has been a nice little spy book.
Oh.
And you know, it involved some new technology, but it was just take place in the near future, so I let that slide. And in this issue, the aliens show up.
But in a cool way.
Yeah, but I wasn't
in
for that.
Yeah, but like a distant future kind of thing.
I wasn't really in for that. I was in for a spy book. So I don't know if I'm going to continue with it or not.
Well, they had in the first issue, it was like a modified Israeli soldier, and so
yeah, but that's still all within the realm of technology. You know?
Yeah, that's Lazarus.
Yeah, it's all like, you know, in 10 years maybe we're gonna all have modified, but you know, parts. That's all fine, yeah. Good. Like I said before, it had technology that was just appropriate for a near future book, but I wasn't in this for aliens.
Well, then
I know what you're saying, and normally I'm the first guy to rally your cause in this sense, I mean, as you know. But in this context, it's handled in a realistic kind of way, I suppose. In a this is a, you know, what would get the world's government to change in a certain way and do everything. And I mean, I guess, I don't know. There's a warehouse. This is a weird issue. I don't mean that in a bad way. They're all very different from one another. Actually, it's a lot of people in chairs talking to each other. That's mostly what it's been.
Yep.
For the last few issues, but I'm fine with that.
I thought this issue was gorgeous. I thought it
absolutely
was really, really cool, and just like really neutral tones and still that beautiful and evocative. That guy got karate chopped in the neck. That hurt.
That happened in another book somewhere. I forgot which one, but there was a lot of karate chopping to the neck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, Josh, I'm glad you put Captain America 15 in the rundown because I forgot I had things to say about it and I forgot to put it in the rundown. So,
was there anything that you had to say about it that's more significant than the psychedelic super soldier Dr. Mindbubble?
No.
Because it's funny. The whole thing was sort of a dark treatise on war. And hey, it's Dr. Mindbubble, the psychedelic super soldier.
He has a little
who has
a spout coming out of his head with bubbles popping out.
Under a derby hat and a candy cane.
Oh, Rick Remender. Oh,
that's a curveball. That's what we call that.
I was annoyed for a couple points earlier, like when you see Cap's old costumes and there's no floppy boots. Mm-hmm. Like they're trying to make us forget that he had the floppy boots. And also, this new Nick Fury does not work in this role.
Mm-hmm.
He's supposed to have all this heft in his talking about war and the weight of history on his shoulders, but it doesn't work as a new, you know, this is not Nick Fury from World War II. This is supposed to be his son who's, he, you know, he's basically a junior officer.
Yeah.
the scene works great if it's old Nick Fury, but because they had the shoehorn in a new Nick Fury, it doesn't really work.
Well, the thing is, as far as I can tell, like, there's not really – they don't write Nick Fury any differently depending on which one it is.
The point is the speech works great if it's old Nick Fury.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah, but also Dr. Mindbubble.
Dr. Mindbubble erased every doubt I had.
Dr. Mindbubble, the worst G.I. Joe character ever.
He's Dr. Mindbender's cousin.
The Nick Fury thing is doubly odd because old Nick Fury is coming back in that Jason Aaron original Sin book.
Good.
I mean, not to replace him, but they clearly talk about the original grizzled Nick Fury. So, although that was like...
Can he meet Dr. Mindbubble?
Use him anymore or something. Hopefully.
Because I'd really like to see old grizzled Nick Fury meet Dr. Mindbubble and punch him in his spout.
Yeah. He could shoot a bullet right down that spout.
I turned this page and I was like, huh. That's awesome. Look, he's got tails. His jacket's got tails.
Yeah. He's Dr. Mindbubble.
He's jaunty.
Yeah. So, one of the things I thought was really cool about Wolverine and the X-Men number 40 was we just got to have Cyclops and Wolverine talk. And I got to tell you, I was a little disinterested in everything else that was going on until that stuff happened. And I was like, okay, here's some meat. Here's something I can get into.
I hope that this is sort of an end to temporarily the Wolverine and Cyclops fight that's been happening for the last 5 years or whatever it's been. I mean, it's been fine, but it's just time
for constant stalemates.
Yeah.
And I think this is his second to last issue, Jason Aaron's. It read very much like the final goodbye, but I looked in the thing. I think it's the next one. But this sort of wraps up his main storylines. But I really like the fact that, you know, Wolverine and Cyclops just sat down over a beer and a lot of blood. Because I don't know if you guys know, Wolverine does not have his healing power anymore.
Right.
I think I keep forgetting that.
Yeah, because I've been reading his solo book.
So maybe he should go to a doctor then. instead of
drinking something that thins your blood out, therefore makes you bleed more.
This is exactly where I was going, yeah.
Has Wolverine ever been to a doctor before?
Why would he, like a
traditional doctor, like to go
maybe
like,
in the current series?
Imagine how many forms
he
have to fill out.
Just lost his powers.
Just passed.
He's never had healthcare. Never had to deal with healthcare.
He doesn't have healthcare. Yeah.
Well, it's because he's Canadian.
Wait until he deals with the healthcare system. But he lives in America, Josh. Even Canadians who live here have to go to the doctor.
Uh oh. He's not going to like that one bit.
I would see a whole issue where he has got to deal with an insurance
smoker?
Company.
Yes. Drinker, yes. Dangerous occupation, yes.
They should have a storyline where he gets like chicken pox because he's never had chicken pox before.
Prior condition, head removal, complete.
skeleton ripped out of my body.
I was burned alive several times. I've been dropped from orbit. It's a problem. But there you go.
I want to see him go berserker on Aetna.
So suppose that you're out there and you're thinking to yourself, I really want to read a book that has a scene for 3 pages of Batman jerking off in the shower. What book?
Was that in The Dark Knight this week?
What book could I read?
No, it was in Sex Number 10.
Sex Number 10, that's right.
I think any day on Tumblr, I think you could probably find that.
That's, yeah. There it is, though. That's all I have. I don't remember anything else. That was how.
It wasn't implied. Like,
no.
It's out there.
Literally.
In close-up and extreme close-up.
I think I still think this is a great, great book.
No, it's
and
fantastic.
I know that I don't remember what else. Somebody else had sex.
This is the other comic where somebody got caught chopped in the throat, but it was only in her mind.
Yeah.
Catwoman character.
The throat.
But the significant thing in this issue was that Batman ran into Robin.
Mm-hmm.
Did you read the essay in the back?
Joe wrote a lot about the Beatles.
Yeah, a lot.
So that's
4 pages.
That's the two things that this issue has going for it. Is I just want to be clear, in case these sound like things you're interested in. There's three stylistic pages of Batman jerking off in the shower, and 4 pages of Beatles essay. I don't know how else to sell a book. There it is.
What Beatles track would you play against Batman jerking off in the shower?
Oh, okay.
Here comes the walrus. I am the walrus, sorry.
Here comes the sun.
Maybe I was mixing.
I would go with Happiness is a Warm Gun.
There you go. I wouldn't go with Here Comes the Sun.
No,
because
I was saying that's what you mix the two titles together.
Yeah. I don't think the sun's coming up in this book for quite a bit.
No. I don't agree with all of Joe's conclusions on the Beatles, but it was an interesting read.
Yeah.
So that was this week's books. Now let's get to a quick segment that I like to call Paul and Connor Talking Comics, because Josh doesn't read trades, so this is we're talking about the trades we've been reading lately.
I'm not against them.
No, you just don't have time. I understand.
There you go.
Now, Paul, I read a couple this week, a couple of books, okay. Both from Image Comics.
What did you read?
The first one, The Walking Dead Volume 19, which is the latest volume. It's the March to War arc in which, and I'm not going to, damn it, it's Walking Dead rules. This is the prepare for All Out War. All Out War is the current storyline. And I was thinking as I was reading this that I was really enjoying it, but if I had been reading it in issues, I probably would have been a little annoyed because yeah. There's a lot of just moving pieces around. I don't know, Josh, if you recall that storyline or not, but it was a lot of just getting people ready for the war.
This whole thing with
Negan.
I can't remember. Yeah. The whole thing with Negan is kind of just felt like that the whole way through. And it's entertaining enough because I don't know how it's – I haven't figured out how it ends.
Right.
But, yeah. The issues go really fast. The thing is, you get a Walking Dead issue, and the trades are basically the same way, just not quite as fast. You read a Walking Dead issue. It's not that it's light, but for whatever reason, it moves in such a way that, you know, you're done with that issue in a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, when's the next one? So it can feel like that, but they've been coming out more than monthly. So
yeah. You know, well, the wars have been twice a week.
Jesus.
There was some great stuff here in which like Negan chastises them for shooting the zombies.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you know, we don't waste ammunition. That's why we're formidable. And then his bat gets shot. But I thought it was fun. It's just I thought if I'd been reading this every month or whatever it was, I would have been annoyed because it's a setup arc.
I do get the sense that Kirkman really likes to write Negan.
Oh, he's fun to write. He's totally fun.
Yeah,
to write.
But I think there is a point that you can overdo it.
Yeah,
we're almost getting there. It's entertaining. It absolutely is. But you know, it needs to get on with it. But you've still got the whole war to go, which yeah. I'm in the middle of.
And the great thing about this, which is what we've always said, but it's especially true with Negan, is that you really do never know who he's going to kill. You know, I think it's more than normal with this book because he did that horrible thing in issue 100 to a main character. So, like when he had them all lined up on their knees with his bat in his hands, I thought I really didn't know what was going to happen, which is good.
It's like watching Oz.
Exactly. Or MI5. Now, Paul, what did you read this week?
I read Volume 2 of Old City Blues by Giannis Milo Nogiannis, one of my favorite names in comics.
It's the name that denies itself.
Yeah. He grew up in Greece, I believe, and he read a lot of manga and European comics. And so his style is sort of a confluence of those two things. And Old City Blues, I actually reviewed the first volume back on ifanboy.com, and the second volume came out. iFanboy.com. Oh. We used to do reviews and things.
Oh, we did.
We used to type a lot more than we do now. And it takes place in New Athens in the 2040s. And it's sort of it's a very manga or Japanese kind of thing. Like instead of blowing up Tokyo and building up a Neo-Tokyo on top of it, Athens blew up and they built, or Greece, I think all of Greece like is blown up and they build a new Athens city-state above that. And it's sort of like Mecca and like Blade Runner style cops going around in hover cars and stopping crime and very cyberpunk. And he has this great black and white style, very like dot pitch, like newspaper looking, very grungy, very a lot of gray tones. And it's seriously, it's like, it looks a little bit like what we were talking about Sex just earlier. It looks a lot like that book with elements of manga, like say Pluto or something. So
is
if you took those two and put them two together. No.
I'm out.
Yeah. No mechs jerking off or anything like that.
Oh, well.
It could be.
It could be implied.
It could be in there, yeah. Don't come knocking if this mech's a rockin'.
Who's the publisher?
This is from, the first volume is out from Archaea, and then so it's Boom Archaea
right.
For volume two. But the first volume, that it was kind of light on story. It was very, like, it feels like it was his first thing. This is a little bit more sophisticated. I think he's learning a bit, and he drew several issues of Prophet. So I think some of that craziness rubbed off on him, and so.
Cool.
Step up.
The other book I read this week, actually read this today, this morning, was the first two volumes of Revival from Image Comics.
Good.
Tim Seeley and Mike Norton.
Had you not been reading that?
No.
Oh, awesome.
I like it. I like it more as it went. In the beginning, I wasn't sure if I liked it. And then by the end of the second trade, I was really into it. I think the greatest thing about it is that the characters are really complex At first, they seem kind of like small town stereotypes, but you know, as the more you go, the more layers are revealed of them. I think the sheriff's a really interesting character. You know, he seems like such a good guy, but he's got a lot of dark secrets, and he doesn't like Muslims. But it's not overtly bad; it's just sort of like, you know, he's not comfortable with them.
Yeah, I like how it's. I really like that it feels very regional.
Yes, it totally does.
It feels like a place it feels sort of familiar, but it's different because it's Wisconsin.
Even though, like, even the art from Mike Norton, like the bearded gay cop, looks kind of like a Norwegian Wisconsin guy. Like, he's got the big fat face, and I would say there's a preponderance of skinny, attractive women in this little Wisconsin town. But other than that, I do like it quite a bit. It's a great horror story if you're looking for that kind of thing. You know, all of a sudden, dead people start coming back to life in this small town in Wisconsin, and that, you know, the fallout of that. So it's a horror mystery book kind of.
Does it scratch that Twin Peaks itch for you? Or
it's a different kind of thing, but it's more of a, as I describe it, more of a noir tale.
Mm. It reads. It's really fun to read in issues, I think.
I would be lost. I was thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little lost, but I'm used to that, so I just sort of accept that.
There's a lot of characters, and I find myself constantly having to flip back when they call somebody by their name to remember who that person is, except for like the main characters, who, you know, obviously you know. But I would have a problem.
There's a ton of plot going on.
Yes, there's a lot of plot. A
ton of it, and a lot of different characters, and I like that the world is very dense and that it's not spoon-fed, I suppose.
Yeah, there's ghosts, and there's all kinds of things that happen. You don't know why. There's, you know, the main character, M, who is herself a reviver. Is that what they call them?
Something like that.
She's got problems. And so it's all very interesting. There's the Hmong people. There's a lot of things going on, as you said.
I really like that addition too, because it's you know, that's real. That's a real thing that happens, and that's culture clashing, and that stuff's interesting.
There's a doctor who looks like Saeed. So it's good. I really like it. I really recommend Revival a lot. It's a really good book.
Cool.
And then my other one from Dark Horse Comics, subliminal volume, Sabretooth Swordsman, volume one, I hope. It's called Sabretooth Swordsman and the Mayhem of the Malevolent Mastodon Mathematician.
Whoa!
Yeah, and this one's kind of perfect for episode 420 because this reminds me a lot of Orcstain by James Stokoe. The style is very, very similar. It's by Damon Gentry is the writer, and Aaron Connolly is the amazing, amazing artist. And it's about sort of a, you know, wimpy dude in Central Asia, and he goes up a mountaintop to get some powers. And he comes down a saber-tooth tiger dude with MC Hammer pants and a fez and a big scimitar.
Have a grunch?
Are
there a lot of gronches?
There are gronches, not full frontal gronches though, right. Or gronks or whatever. It looks so similar to Orcstain and James Stokoe's design that if you told me that it was that artist, I would have believed you. But it's amazing, amazing detailed stuff. Lots of blurbs on the back from Brandon Graham. Mike Allred did a pinup in here, and it just sort of came out of nowhere. I just saw it flipping around on Amazon one day, and I was like, that looks interesting. And the only thing is that one of the great parts about Orcstain is that it's in color. This is in black and white, and it's kind of cool, but it's really begging for color. Like, it really wants it for things to stand out, because the line work is so intricate that I think some of that gets lost because it's not colored. So that could have been interesting, but you know, it's crazy. It's mostly for the visuals, but it's pretty funny too, and really irreverent. There's this cloud god that gives him these powers, and obviously the bad guy is a mastodon mathematician with a crazy like weather balloon shaped like an elephant head, and he, you know, steals cloud gods, and it's
bad
great.
Again.
It's and it's you know, and he's got the MC Hammer pants and a scimitar.
When did those come back in style?
They did briefly.
Did they?
I was seeing them around right before I left New York. And that was a real good reason to be like, all right, I'm out.
I'm going up where plaid is in style all the time.
And all the men's pants got really short. That's stupid. I don't want cold ankles.
All right, so that was Paul and Connor talking trades. I blew the title in the beginning because I'm an idiot. So let's move on and cram a couple of emails in before we get out of here. We're running long, but what the hell. Ryan C. writes and says, just want to let you know that Superior Spider-Man number 1 was published on January 8th, 2013. And that was a question we asked in the last episode. Had this book been going on for 2 years? No, in fact, it's only been going on for one. That's what the double shipping
really?
Has done. Yes.
Wow.
I heard that there was a bit of a dust-up last time relating to Spider-Man.
Was there?
No.
I don't think so.
No. I mean, Jim started talking about it. I went and got a drink.
I don't think there was a dust up.
I came back. He was still going. He literally, he hadn't ended that sentence. It was just commas.
Let's finish Ryan's email. I thought it was interesting that you felt like it had been 2 years to get to 25 in, though they just did it in one. Marvel's double shipping has forced me to drop a bunch of interesting titles like this one and pretty much all of the X-Men titles. Do you think that Marvel's being too aggressive with their shipping schedule? How do you think this will affect the industry's health and growth? Will they be able to maintain the quality at this pace? And I think they've been – oh, this is me talking, not Ryan. Clearly, they can keep the quality up. They've been doing it for years, and the books have been great.
Yes.
So that's not been a problem.
Now, the other question is really the interesting one because – and I've seen this from both sides that, you know, he just said it forced me to drop some interesting titles. And then the Marvel line would be, and I've seen Marvel and I've seen creators use this, is that, you know, well, if you like this, why don't you want more of it?
I'm not made of money, Marvel.
Because it costs twice as much,
right.
is the answer. And I don't know. Part of it strikes me as if there's people who really just can't get enough of it and they have the money they want to spend on it, then it's great for everyone. The other side of it is it really is squeezing your existing customer base. Say that you have a budget for comics, like I can spend $20 a week on comics or something like that. Then what you're doing is ostensibly saying you're going to get twice as many comics, but more of them are going to be the same.
They're hoping is that you spend that $20 on Marvel books. I mean, it's a tactic to squeeze out the other publishers. And I mean, I don't like that. I think part of the dark. I mean, it's business, but I think part of the underside to this whole sales boom that people aren't talking about because they're too happy counting the money is that variant covers and this double shipping, because people are just spending more. It's the same people spending way more money. But anyway, you know, I think I agree with everything you said.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's if money is not an issue and time is not an issue, you want to read twice as much Spider-Man. But I really like to go to Five Guys.
Right.
But I don't like to go to Five Guys four times a week because then I'm not going to like Five Guys so much.
He needs a new den. He's got to expand.
Yeah. Well, not if I'm dead. If I'm dead, he doesn't make a
thing. Before you die, there's the angioplasty, whatever happens with that. And,
it won't be long.
So, Paul, any thoughts?
Angioplasties have balloons.
All right.
Right?
Dr. Mind Bubble's back. So,
I always feel disingenuous talking about this stuff because this is like our gig. So, we do this. So, there's a reason for me to be buying all these books.
He's not asking you why you buy them. He's just saying, do you think it's, well, I mean, it's clearly not affecting the quality, as we've said.
It's definitely not affecting the quality. And I do enjoy, and, you know, I think it's part, you know, part of my enjoyment of all new X-Men is that it comes out so frequently. And it just feels like this constant story that I get to follow. Mm-hmm. And I don't forget things between issues. So that's pretty cool. And over, you know, the other side of the aisle, when they're not double shipping things, I am forgetting stuff.
So Marvel's aggressiveness is working.
I think so. Yeah, it's sort of changed my metabolism for, you know, retaining story.
Diabolical.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you want more, that's good. And their job is to tell you you want more, so here's more.
Yep.
I don't know.
Well, let's go to the other side of the aisle. And that's the next email then.
Monty D writes in. The DC solicits came out this week. DC has been canceling a lot of their comics recently that are actually selling very well and gets decent amount of attention coverage, like Animal Man, Batman the Dark Knight, Teen Titans, Nightwing, etc. It's interesting to see these titles go while some of the lowest selling DC titles are still going, like Batwing, Stormwatch, All-Star Western, etc., which I don't want to see getting canceled. At the beginning of the New 52, they were canceling the lowest selling titles left and right. I have to give DC credit here for continuing those low selling titles, like an All-Star Western, Batwing, and Stormwatch, three of the original New 52 titles. What do you guys think about this?
Stormwatch has been canceled.
Yes, yeah. Stormwatch was canceled. That was one of the takeaways. I think All-Star Western is around because they like it. They want it around.
There's lots of reasons why books get canceled. Not all of them is sales. Some of them is cost. You know, a book like All-Star Western might make a profit. We don't know. You know what I mean? It could be that the cost of the talent is lower than the other books. Who knows? There could be many reasons why books are canceled.
Who's drawing All-Star Western right now?
It's the same team.
Still Moritat?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, well, he draws on smaller paper.
So that's cheaper.
Right away you're saving.
He literally draws on printer paper. I have his original pages, so.
Yeah.
That's one thing.
And he's putting two pages on each of those sheets.
Right. Exactly.
He draws with a magnifying glass. So that's cheap right there.
Now that's a really good point, because there are different talent costs. There are different things like that to take into consideration. I don't know. I think it's odd. I thought at this point it was all economics. But maybe there's something to keeping that. Maybe the All-Star trades sell well.
There's also copyright considerations too. I don't know that that comes into play here. Like, but that's just another consideration. They have to keep certain titles out to keep copyrights going. I mean, the thing is, there's all kinds of reasons why books don't get cast, and that's why publishers and lawyers make a lot of money.
So you think if Animal Man is going, maybe that's because Jeff Lemire was going to be done with it, and then they can't figure, with anybody else, they don't think they'll bring in people.
Right, he's just moving Animal Man over.
I think that's definitely a consideration, and that might be part of Teen Titans too, because
Teen Titans is getting rebooted.
It's getting changed into something else.
He's totally getting rebooted.
With all that, with the news of its cancellation, they were saying that he's ending the story that he started. So it's not like it's cutting off and, the mainstream or anything.
I mean, Batman Dark Knight is just one of many Batman books, and I'm sure, that's not going to come back.
It's interesting that Batwing is still going. I can't figure that out.
Right. Nightwing, it could be DiDio's final wish to kill Dick Grayson, or it could be they're just going to restart that too. Mm-hmm. Who knows? There's all kinds of reasons. No one ever knows why the books are canceled.
Mostly money.
Some money's involved somewhere.
Oh, sure.
I wouldn't be surprised if they just flip coins over there, too.
Sure, that could be it, too. Money's I don't like that. Coin is money. Money's always a factor, even if it's just a coin flip.
I believe it was Billy Crystal who said, and this is Spinal Tap, mime is money.
Contact at iFanboy.com to write us, 888-FANBOYS, 326-2697 to call us. And you've been sending in your relationship emails, which we have asked for those, if you recall, a few shows ago. We want to gather together enough to do a whole show, not a whole show, but a whole segment with just those emails. We want some good, gather some good ones together. So keep sending in those relationship questions, either via email or via voicemail. And we gather enough together, we'll do a whole relationship segment, which will be fun because we have no expertise, but it's fun to talk about.
Plugs. Yeah. Plugs. Okay. So we've got.
Plugs, not drugs, Paul.
We've been pretty busy. So go over to Cameron Watches Movies. Me and my buddy Cameron Rice and David Ocampo talked about Her, which is my favorite movie of last year, which unfortunately I hadn't seen before we did the year-end all-media roundup. So really proud of that conversation. Her? So that's Cameron Watches
Movies. Is that an Arrested Development spinoff by any chance?
What?
Her?
It's not.
Her?
You might like it. Spike Jonze film. It's great. Her? What else? We talked about True Detective. Yes. We're reviewing all the TV shows on Fuzzy Typewriter. Connor's on the second episode talking about True Detective, talking about each episode as they go. We're also doing that with Justified. What
Jeez,
else?
Paul.
Comic book resources. Usually I'll be doing something happened to my brain, guys.
Sunday conversations.
How much did you smoke before the show?
I'm fine. I'm all right. I'm okay. Sunday Conversations, where we talk to creators about things other than the projects that they're currently working on. The most recent one is Declan Shalvey. We talked about science fiction. We talked about that episode with Leah Brahms, with Geordi LaForge, and Star Trek The Next Generation. Took a week off this week.
Paul, let me
and we'll
say something about these CBR columns. I'm glad that people in the comments section are finally understanding what it is you're doing. Because every week it was, Weren't you talking about comics? And now
you got Jeff Parker in. You didn't talk about Aquaman at all. We talked about the Natalie Wood case. That's more interesting than Aquaman.
It's true.
It's not like you can't find them talking about Aquaman somewhere else.
Exactly. That's the thing. We're doing the interviews that no one else is doing. So having fun over there. And also, Booksplode coming up this week with Scotty Young talking about the first two volumes of Akira.
You got him all lathered up about Akira. He's been all over Twitter.
Yep.
Saying it's the best book that's ever been made or something like that.
It's really exciting to talk to an artist who gets excited about someone else's art. Like, it's, not I would have done it this way. It's I can't believe this. I never would have thought of that. That's really refreshing.
You could from an artist's point of view, specifically that artist's point of view, I think he can make a case for that. It's a pretty big deal book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I think.
And we're reading it for the first time, so
that's cool. Neat. I don't think I ever finished it. So I guess it's probably not the best.
Six volumes. Yeah.
I think my roommate was buying it.
2,000 pages.
And then I moved out. I did a Talksplode, and I put it on the internet. I know!
What?
The last one was in like 11 months ago for me. There was one in May that Paul did before that. So it was Talksplode number 65 in a series with myself and Charles Soule, who was writing while we were doing it.
Did you find out the answer to my question?
What was your question?
How do his clients feel about the level of attention they're getting from his, in his lawyerly work?
I did not ask that question.
Damn it.
I was rusty. Also on the show was Jill Mulvey, creator of Scam. And we talk about it was a lot about sort of the mind of the creator and the motivation and what it takes to sort of get yourself to make comics in sort of this, you know, in this climate and how things are going and how you have to push yourself and a lot of that. And we talked to Charles a lot about sort of the amount of work that he's doing and how you deal with that. It was about an hour and a half, really interesting conversation. We talked a little bit about sort of the change that Kickstarter's made to stuff going on. I have a story in the Scam book that Joe and Comics Tribe are kickstarting this month. So if you wanted to check that out and donate to that, you can see that. It's 7 pages. It's a little tiny part of it.
The book's 7 pages?
No, my part is. So, you know, I'm not saying go because I have a 7-page thing in it. But it's a good story. I'm really proud of that. But the rest of it
is very good.
It's fun, too. Yeah, thank you. But it was a really fun conversation. It got me it got me thinking about this stuff again because, quite honestly, I haven't had a chance to in a while. So it was really nice. And I actually got some comic stuff done this week, too. So
excellent.
It was good for me, too.
Yay.
And finally, coming up, look forward to a Animation Brain Trust discussion on Justice League War, the latest from DC Comics' Animation Division. I don't believe we'll be talking about that one they put out secretly to Target just because none of us have it. But you'll look forward to that in February. Or not. Don't look forward to it.
Do you want to tease? We might be doing a Marvel one.
Oh yeah, Marvel announced they're putting out a high quality adult esque or you know aimed at adults film.
Joe Casey would like to have a conversation with them.
Punisher and
it's a Punisher Scarlet.
Punisher and Black Widow story. Paul and I were looking at the trailer and decided it's probably a good addition to the lineup. People are always saying, "Why don't you talk about Marvel movies?" Well,
it looks good.
This one looks worthy of the discussion. So look forward to that. And I think it's in March. I believe that comes out.
Sounds right.
In the meantime, head over to ifmweb.com, talk about any of these shows we've talked about. You can find all those posts. You can discuss what happened there. You can correct us, berate us, which is what people like to do. So go over there and do that, ifmweb.com. Follow us at twitter.com/ifanboy and at facebook.com/ifanboy to find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. You can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 3262697, with any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, corrections or berations. I don't mind corrections. Normally we need it. The berating I don't need so much.
Yeah, berating is not, that's not cool.
You know what? I don't, you know, we still occasionally get the no love for whatever book we didn't talk about. Mm. Yeah, sometimes. But I still feel just as bitter about it. That's a different thing though. That's me. Don't worry about that.
So if you're digging this kind of thing, you should write us a review on iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to podcasts. Spread that iFanboy love all around.
Wow, man.
All around,
Wow. Yeah.
Pass it around.
You couldn't find three more lame dudes, though, on this episode, man. I mean, like, we're not even, but, like, hold on.
You're great, Tremé, man.
All I do is Rory Cochrane from Dazed and Confused. That's I've been working that character for 20 years now.
He's a good character.
Yeah, he's my favorite stoner character. Martha Washington was a hip lady, man. What a great line!
It was. All right, until next
on
week.
The fields all day, and she would have a fat bowl waiting for him when he came in, man.
Oh,
and always
boy.
Like, oh, that's him. That's the same guy who does that. All right.
I'm Connor.
I'm cool.
Dave's not here.
Goodbye.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.